97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, a lawsuit filed on behalf of two former UNC student athletes. Our guest, one of the attorneys representing the former players, former State Supreme Court Associate Justice Bob Orr. Bob, what's at the heart of the lawsuit?
Well, at the heart of the lawsuit, which is being structured as a potential class action, the class has to be certified by the court, is a two-part piece of litigation, one involving UNC and the classes that we're all familiar with now, in which players or students were put into these classes and had no faculty involvement, they didn't attend classes, et cetera. And then there's a second part of the suit against the NCAA, and that is sort of the broad national perspective of the NCAA's responsibility to all student athletes, and particularly the ones at Carolina in this the context of this lawsuit, to that they have a responsibility to ensure that these young men and women that are making hundreds of millions of dollars for the college sports industry get the college education that they're being promised.
The independent review board that's being called for, what's the purpose of that?
I think we've seen across the nation at a variety of schools over the years a similar kind of academic misconduct involving athletics that we saw here at UNC. And so the NCAA, in our view, has not adequately addressed that kind of national issue. And so the idea and the perspective of the lawsuit against the NCAA is that this commission would investigate and quantify the quality of educational courses that athletes are getting at all of the representative schools.
We talked briefly before we started the interview about the APR,
right,
and how the NC2A measures progress toward graduation. And if the underlying numbers that you get from the member institutions are false or incorrect or not full, then how can your formula work? Is that part of what you're talking about, this oversight of the NC2A?
Well, certainly the APR is a controversial component of it, but the schools that are members of the NCAA have essentially ceded, in many ways, academic control of their academic programs as it relates to athletes competing in NCAA competitions. And as the NCAA has purported to toughen academic standards requiring the APR at a certain level or you can't participate in postseason competition, you know, it has, in our view, increased the likelihood and pressures at the various campuses to make sure that the so-called student athlete is having an adequate grade point average, no matter whether that means they take paper courses or whatever means that may be necessary to keep them moving forward so that these APR numbers are met. And of course, the real problem, we talk about this in the complaint, is one, you're bringing in some instances, students that are perhaps academically unprepared to do college-level work. And it's not like we're bringing them in and then, putting them in this strong academic environment. We're bringing them in and working them 30, 40, 50 hours a week. They're missing classes. When you look at the kinds of rules and requirements that the NCAA imposes, all in the name of sound academics, it creates a climate and a greater pressure, considering all of the money involved in college sports. It creates the kind of pressures that I think resulted in the scandal here at UNC.
Before we get too much further, and so that folks don't confuse you with someone who writes for GoPack.com, what's your educational pedigree?
Well, I have an undergraduate degree from UNC. I have a law degree from UNC. I have one son with an undergraduate degree from UNC. I have a daughter and son with graduate degrees from UNC. I saw my first Carolina game in 1951, a football game. I watched the 57 National Championship game on a black and white TV at midnight. I've been to three Final Fours, multiple bowl games. I consider myself historically a huge Carolina fan and supporter of college athletics.
So why come against the university in this way?
Well, unfortunately, UNC is, in some respects, the poster child of the problems nationally that we're seeing. And evidentiary-wise, the evidence is all out there as a result of the variety of reports and studies that have been done. I do think that I see this as a national problem. The Hausfeld Law Firm, who are the lead counsel, I think the individual plaintiffs representing the class see this as a national problem, and unfortunately the only way the national issues are going to be addressed, I think, is through litigation.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion about a lawsuit just filed by on behalf of two former UNC students. And we're speaking with one of the attorneys, Bob Orr. Bob, right now, Rashonda McCants and Devin Ramsey are the two named plaintiffs.
Right.
If there were 3,100 students involved in these bogus classes, roughly half of them were athletes. So let's use 1,500 as a nice round number. Why only two out of 1,500?
Well, remember, they're representatives of a class. And part of it is sort of understanding conceptually how class actions work. And you simply need to have one or two or three representatives of the class whose experience in some acceptable way mirrors those of other people who would be eligible to be part of the class. So members of the class could be men or women who participated in athletics at Carolina during the time frame in question and who took one course, took five courses, took 10 courses. All of those would fit within the confines of the class. But Devin and Rashonda are representatives of the class.
You mentioned it being a national problem. Chronicle of Higher Education says
yes.
There are currently about 20 ongoing investigations into academic misconduct at member institutions. Does that surprise you, that number?
Well, it doesn't surprise me, and those are only the investigations based upon information that apparently has come to the NCAA. There was actually a story that I read last night. I think the vice president for enforcement was interviewed by the AP, and it was interesting. The reasons for this that he articulated mirror the exact complaints or provisions in our complaint about why the academic fraud at UNC and this issue nationally has taken place. And so the NCAA understands, I think all of the member institutions understand that the environment of big-time college sports and the huge amounts of money and the pressure to win and the academic requirements create an environment that at least for some portion of these so-called student athletes make it very difficult for them to be successful academically, and it encourages and promotes, I think, in a unfortunate way, cheating and cutting corners. I mean, there's a cheating scandal at Dartmouth involving, in part, football players. And I read a quote from one of the Dartmouth football players saying, you know, the enormous 40-hour requirements for football make it so much more difficult for us to perform academically, and you start cutting corners.
He mentioned 40 hours. I've heard 50 hours, 60 hours.
Right.
The limit is supposed to be 20 hours. How do teams, how do schools get around that?
Well, there are so many loopholes in the 20-hour requirement that it's like a piece of Swiss cheese. I mean, for example, game days only count towards 3 hours. So if the Tar Heels travel to Miami to play football and they end up spending 2.5, 3 days in travel, preparation, meetings, et cetera, the game experience only counts towards 3 hours. There is a huge competition to win, and because of the money and everything associated with it. And, you know, these young men are competitive athletes, and you know, they're put in a situation where you never hear coaches talking about the star running back needing to spend more time in a language lab or needing to spend more time in the library. What you hear is they need to spend more time in the film room, the weight room, all of the various and the sundry other components of athletics.
Something that comes directly from the complaint. The NC2A sat idly by, permitting big-time college sports programs to operate as diploma mills that compromise educational opportunities and future job prospects of student-athletes for the sake of wins and revenues. The monetary award that would be being sought, is that
right,
based on these former student-athletes not getting the employment opportunities that they should have because they didn't get the education they should have?
Well, I think this early in the process, structuring the financial remedy or the educational remedy for the specific members of the class is still to be determined. But I think at a minimum, what you want is if a student took 3 or 4 classes that under any accreditation system would not be accepted, that at a minimum they're either entitled to, you know, the financial value of what they lost or educational credits. And I know UNC is making some efforts in that regard, but you know, we're a long way from the remedy portion of the case.
Another part of the complaint: USC is seen as an extreme example of corruption and lack of oversight. Pretty strong language.
Well, it is, and I think in a lot of ways it was mirrored by university officials after the Weinstein report. And while I don't necessarily agree with all of the conclusions that Mr. Weinstein reached in his report, I do think it evidences a 15-20-year period that we know of in which the normal academic standards that would be expected of UNC by alumni, by accreditation organizations were not met, and in many instances ignored, approved, and unfortunately for UNC, you know, like I said, you've got all of these reports that document it. I mean, you know, when you're talking about foreign language classes where a shadow section is created and the instructor who would normally teach that section has his signature forged on the grade sheet, I mean, that's pretty serious academic misconduct. Far more so than what the NCAA prosecuted in UNC's case, that being a tutor giving too much help on papers and citations to some football players.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Bob Orr about a lawsuit just filed on behalf of two former UNC athletes. Bob, one of the things that I've seen in the national writing, this one I believe came from CBS.com, this is the ultimate test for the NC2A. Not for UNC, but for the NC2A. Do you see the reasoning of that writer?
Absolutely. I think this is a national problem. You know, Carolina has been the whipping boy of this issue now for 4 years. But in reality, the system that the NCAA has fostered and developed and promoted, all the while, in my opinion, hypocritically talking about their students first, we put academics ahead of athletics, I think it's a totally bogus PR effort by the NCAA about their commitment to the real education quality that these young men and women get. And I think it's important, particularly when you're talking about the revenue sports, that these young men in D1 basketball and football are making enormous amounts of money for everybody. And while reluctantly, the NCAA and the conference and the member schools are slowly dealing with the compensation, the full cost of attendance issues. They're still saying what we're really giving you, and this is why we don't pay you, we're giving you a real college education. And unfortunately, there is example after example after example around the country, and unfortunately here at UNC with the AFM scandal, that we're seeing that's not taking place. And so I think the NCAA, all the chips are in the middle now. You know, are we really supporting a real college educational experience for these young men and women? Even if it takes 6 years, even if it takes 16 years, you know, we've got to make sure that the educational quality is provided to them.
UNC has to worry not only about the NC2A, but also about its accrediting body, SACS.
Yes.
Speculation is that the NC2A won't come down that hard on Carolina because NC2A is a member institution. The members make up the body. They're afraid of what might be found out at their place if they go too far down this path. Is that legitimate speculation?
Well, I think every school playing big-time college sports should be worrying about accreditation and making sure that their academic programs and the educational majors. I mean, you got clustering issues, you've got paper classes, online classes, all sorts of problems. So I do think accreditation is important. Who knows what the NCAA will do with UNC, but frankly, and I think this is alleged in the complaint, the NCAA was sufficiently aware of the core issues involving this academic scandal as far back as the summer of 2011. And yet, they have essentially attempted to sweep it under the rug and sort of make it go away because of the broader implications. So, you know, if the NCAA, as we get into discovery, I think we'll be able to prove that, you know, they knew about forged grade sheets, they knew about the shadow curriculum, and if they're going to come down on UNC, they're going to have to come down on themselves too.
Bob, in the minute or so that we have left, how does this case compare to, or what relationship does it have to the Ed O'Bannon case?
Well, of course, Michael Hausfeld and the Hausfeld law firm has represented Ed O'Bannon and that class. They're the lead counsel in this case. I think the important thing is they learned through the O'Bannon litigation that the NCAA says, oh, we don't have to provide any compensation to these players. We give them a great college education. And now I think we all are understanding that at least to a degree and certainly to a pool of at-risk admittees to universities around this country, that's not true.
And again, speculation is that the NC2A and member institutions are quaking in their boots because of the success that Hausfeld had in the Ed O'Bannon case. So we'll be very interested to see how this case turns out. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Bob Orr. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.